Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly, Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus. Well, we get into murder reduction strategies, and we have a man who has the boots on the ground from New Orleans calling in and telling us what he did to cut the murder rate, or what his team did over there in half. Also, we'll do the news as well. First, I'll tell you about Meguiar's car waxes. Well, they've come a long way. Last year, Meguiar's introduced hybrid ceramic spray wax. It's advanced SiO2 hybrid technology delivers ceramic wax protection and durability. No rubbing, no curing, no buffing. Provides extreme water beating action. This year, Meguiar's launched their liquid version. Seals the paint for long lasting protection against the elements. Easy to use. Applies like traditional liquid wax. Yeah, man. I know the Meguiar's guys. These guys are into cars. I see them at all the car stuff. Also, the hybrid ceramic spray detailer removes contaminants like dust, fingerprints, bird droppings, boosts gloss, and enhances the protection. And that's good. But you don't even have to wash your car in the driveway now. If it's a little bit dirty, just use the spray detailer. Of course, Meguiar's, and of course, the ceramic, the hybrid ceramic stuff. Ceramic made easy. That's Meguiar's.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is The Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, best-selling authors and the hosts of No Stupid Questions, Angela Duckworth and Stephen Dubner. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, Kanye's VP pick, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. We love that about you. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian?
The motherfucker.
People were asking me about my look before the show.
Yeah.
I was explaining I had makeup applied to me yesterday by Nate Adams, the man who co-directs all the docs, which was I was slated to do Tucker Carlson, and hair and makeup is very catch can these days. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. Sometimes there's provide your own. And if you guys want to know how life works in general, it works like this. You don't need to wear makeup, but you do need to wear makeup if the other person you're on screen with is wearing makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need your teeth whitened, but you do need your teeth whitened if you're sitting in between two people who have had their teeth whitened.
And between Kelly Ripa and Ryan Seacrest.
Right. And you don't need a publicist unless other people have publicists and are now jockeying to get their people on your show and you not on that show. You actually need all these things to ward off and fight others more than you actually need it yourself.
It's an arms race.
Yes. And so if you're on TV and you don't wear makeup, you will look weird because the host has been professionally made up. So I was informed that there was no hair and makeup for yesterday's Tucker Carlson appearance. So Nate, who is, I don't know if you guys love this quality in people as much as I do, but just a kind of a, he's just one of these guys that if the car's broken down, he'll jump out and start pushing, you know, he just drops stuff and jumps on stuff. And I just went over to the other shop 10 minutes before I was leaving to the remote studio to do Tucker Carlson. I said, Nate, where's our powder puff? And he's like, hold on. And he sat me down and he just like face toward the light. And then he was like patting and pounding. He's doing his thing. And then he complimented me. He said, your skin looks good. I said, well, you know, I've been going for a lot of work. I look out for what I eat. Yes, Brian.
Sure.
I would imagine just by virtue of directing so many documentaries and interviewing so many people, he's become somewhat adept at just applying makeup on the fly just as needed. He's not an expert, of course. It's sort of the jack of all trades, master of none. Like, that's the guy you want to hang out with, is the guy, I don't need a car mechanic for a friend, or I don't need to be a car mechanic. I just need to know how to hook up the jumper cables for when the car, you know, the battery dies. You don't need to be a makeup artist. You'd be able to like make it look competent and passable.
Yeah, and he's the kind of guys like pulling your collar and you know, doing the lint thing on your lapel and kind of straightening out and pulling the shirt down that bunches up, and he's just that guy. So he powdered me up, and I gelled my own hair, and was off to Tucker. I went.
Now I do have a question. You said this was yesterday.
Yes.
Well, it's not a question, actually. It's more of a comment. You broke the cardinal female makeup rule. You slept in your makeup!
I rinsed myself. I rinsed myself before I went to bed because I, not so much the makeup, but the hair gel. When my hair gets gelled up, it feels kind of crispy. For lack crunchy, of a better term, yeah. A little crunchy. Yeah. And so I did the warm water rinse. Yes, Brian.
One subject we've not broached in terms of your hygiene or what you do to your skin. Do you wear sunblock? Because you do go to the beach a little bit. You go in the sun, no?
No, I never use sunblock, although I do use... I always try to put on like a big brim hat or something like that before I hit the bricks. I don't... not use sunblock because I'm fundamentally against sunblock. I'm just too lazy to use sunblock. Although I do believe everything has, you know, nothing is free. You know, you spraying it all over your kids and then inhaling it or whatever chemicals going onto their skin. And there's going to be something that has to do with overuse of sunblock or something. There's going to be some vitamin D deficiency or something that your skin isn't doing that it should be doing. I know dermatologists and doctors they were kind of nuts about it about 15 years ago. Now they're kind of trying to thread the needle where they're like, well, you do need vitamin D, you know, so you have to get in the sun a little bit, but you don't overdo it. So they backed off. The accelerator on sunblock was sort of pedal to the metal. Now they're kind of feathering it a little bit.
I was told by a doctor you should have 20 minutes outside in the sun every day with no sunblock for the vitamin D.
Which, remember, 15 years ago, it was, I don't care if you're walking to your mailbox. You put on that sunblock before you leave the whatever.
You wake up, you brush your teeth, put on sunblock.
Yeah. Brush your teeth with the sunblock.
Right.
And
can't be too safe.
It's also, it's like a little counterintuitive that the sun is bad for you. I mean, everyone knows too much and whatever. So I just bought a floppy hat with like that... sort of Lawrence of Arabia flap hanging off the back, you know, and I put on the floppy hat and take a hike. I just got another article just from a doctor turned, I guess, journalist who just put this tweet out. Interesting, a little more interesting than the normal, hey, you don't need shampoo article I read you guys twice a year. This one's a little more in depth, but it's on the same subject because he's talking about your skin being a big vital part of your big organ and a big, big vital part of the flora and fauna of your body. But Dawson's eating. What are you eating, Dawson?
Brie on a French bread loaf.
Wow.
Ooh, la, la.
When did Jack in the Box start offering?
I don't know.
Is it deep fried?
You got a lot of rain.
Dawson picks his teeth with the baguette.
It's one of my favorite sandwiches.
All right.
Sounds great.
It sounds very good.
All right. Doctor suddenly quit showering and gave his skin a new lease on life. Some 5 years ago, James Hamblin gave up showering. He tossed the shampoo and conditioner. He quit soap altogether, except for hand washing. He stopped using deodorant, moisturizer, exfoliant, and every other personal care product. He still rinses himself, for example, after a run, and occasionally gets his hair wet. But for all intents and purposes, Hamblin is walking among us as an unclean man. Hamblin, a doctor-turned-journalist, moved to New York from L.A. 5 years ago and found himself living in a tiny studio apartment. As a part of an existential audit, Hamblin considered all the things he might do without. Much like our digestive tract, our skin is home to trillions of crucial bacteria, and the book posits, I guess he wrote a book. Yeah, it's the inquiry of his new book. There we go. Book posits that scrubbing ourselves daily with cleaning agents destroys or upsets that important microbiome that could likely lead to worse health outcomes.
So it's interesting because we were starting to understand this about the gut, you know, that we need this variety going on inside our gut and it needs exposure to things. But we're starting to realize your skin is where a lot of stuff lives as well. And I think we're all kind of learning that it's not the avoiding of everything. It's more the exposure early and often in small doses to kind of get your body acclimated to it. Sorry, keep going.
Well, like you alluded to earlier, what I've been told, the skin is the largest organ in the body. Mm-hmm. It's one continuous organ.
That's right.
It goes on to say our increasingly clean way of living, washing often, staying mostly indoors, eating sterile processed food, may confuse our immune system. For example, allergies, eczema, asthma, condition thought to be linked to autoimmune disorders, could be partly a result of not enough exposure to environmental pathogens, especially in infancy. It's taboo to be what's considered clean. But for his part, Hamblin is not advocating everyone give up showering. Just say begin to question the rituals that are considered a necessity.
Well, there's interesting stuff like, yeah, you know, why so many kids have asthma now? And why there's more there, sorry, in that article I want you to get to, Dawson. But why are so many kids with asthma? Or I've always said, like, why does everyone have peanut allergies? Where'd all the allergies come from? How's it possible? First off, it's counterintuitive because you go, we are refining our society. We're getting cleaner. We're getting more sterile. We're spending more time indoors. Why are allergies going up? It seems like we have less exposure. Well, now do the math. As everything, you know, as the windows get triple paned and as the HEPA filters are scrubbing all the air and as the Purell is flying around, then why are so many kids suffering from allergies now? And when we were kids, didn't seem I
never came up.
I didn't know. Also, I've always had my sort of homespun experience of all the guys I work construction with, like the poor dudes. You know, poor dudes, they had no seasonal allergies. They had no food allergies. I always said, you go on a food run. You don't ask them what they want or if they're lactose intolerant or whatever. They were tolerant to everything. They were intolerant to paying for the food. But if you were paying, they could tolerate anything. And you would just bring back whatever and whenever. And you would go to McDonald's and or Taco Bell, whatever. It didn't matter if there was cheese. There was nothing. There's nothing. Just bring it home. They would all eat it sitting on a pile of drywall. So everyone, and I haven't told you guys about this aspect of my life, but I spent an considerable amount of my childhood in dirt. I dug forts. I dug like tons of underground forts. I didn't have games or video games or anything. Everything was outdoors. Indoors, there was no air conditioning, so it was too fucking hot in the summer. Outdoors was no money, but we could have dirt clod fights. So it was a lot of a lot of forts, like underground forts and tunnels and things like that. Lots of, like literally, I would dig a trench and then put a piece of wood over the top of it and then put dirt over the top of the wood, and I'd have like a little underground cave. Pop Warner football from age 7, which is just doing wind sprints and on your belly and on your feet.
Up downs.
And up downs. And we used to even do, you want to talk about exposure. We do this thing, Brian. I don't know if you remember it from your coaching days, but we do this horrible rocking thing where you lay on your belly on the grass. You take your hands and you clasp them behind you at the small of your back. You kick your feet up and you literally rock back and forth like a rocking horse.
You hogtie yourself.
You hogtie yourself and you rock. Yeah. Tons of collisions and contact with other dudes, sweat flying. I mean, that started at 7. It was all dirt, no antibiotics. Yes, Brian.
Did you, in your younger days, did you ever practice on a baseball infield? Because we did in high school, because we were the JV team, and you know, the varsity team practiced on the nice field, and we practiced on the fucking infield dirt.
Yeah, that whole North Hollywood High was all dirt, like all the time. But sorry, Dawson, finish her off.
In 2016, researchers published a study in New England Journal of Medicine that found an Amish community in Indiana had 4 times lower rates of asthma and 6 times fewer allergies than a genetically similar Hutterite community in South Dakota. The key difference the researchers found was that the Amish grew up having daily interactions with animals and soil on the farm. And there could be other benefits. A recent University of California, San Diego study found that mice cleaned of skin bacteria were more susceptible to skin cancer. Texas A&M researchers discovered that they could ward off mosquitoes by modifying the bacteria on someone's skin.
Hmm.
Or those microscopic mites that live in our pores, they probably eat dead skin, likely helping to exfoliate. He says the skin biome science is just emerging, but one thing is certain. Acceptance will mean overcoming hundreds of years of societal messaging about what it means to be clean.
God, I used to watch all those commercials about the no more tears, lather, rinse, and the kid in the tub. And I'd see, like, I would see when my kids were 1.5, like, Lynette would be slathering on all the moisturizer and just rubbing it all out. It was like, oh, it's so good for them. And it's like, I get it. You are brainwashed just watching all these commercials for all this stuff that you have to put on yourself. And it's, by the way, it's like, hey, if you're not doing this to your kid, you don't love your kid. Like, you're abusing your kid if you're not dousing them in suds, constantly scrubbing and rubbing and not letting them, you know, don't go out there, put that down, or don't put that near your mouth or whatever it is. Turns out, nature knows what it's doing. And I think a lot of this stuff is all about, I think a lot of it is about exposure. And I think there's a physiological exposure, and there's also kind of a emotional exposure. You know, you need that kind of bully. You need to be able to negotiate with the bully. You need to kind of know the bully's patterns and how to kind of stay out of the way of the bully. Not erase the bully or get rid of the bully or never give the kid the chance to kind of deal with that adversity a little bit. That part where you know, show up and you're new and you're not that popular and one of the kids is an asshole. You have to kind of win them over a little bit and figure it out. Maybe tell a joke or stand your ground. Yes, Brian.
My story exactly, except for winning them over.
That's right. All right. Let's see. We have Sean McCluskey, who's on hold. Did you find Sean Maxpata?
He actually reached out to us.
Mm. All right. And he was involved. Oh, hi, Sean.
Hey, Adam. Hey, guys.
Hey,
you are where right now, Sean?
I'm in New Orleans.
And you've been working or have been working. Well, describe the project you're working on.
Yeah. So and before we get started, I just want to say one thing. Sarah Sibley, I had a big crush on you in high school, but you turned me down for the prom and said I wasn't cool enough. Well, now I'm on the Adam Carolla Show, and you can kiss my ass.
Yeah.
You were right, and you've been proven right.
That's right.
Love it.
All right. Sorry, I always love that. So, yeah, let's talk about murder now. So I manage the murder reduction strategy out of New Orleans, out of the mayor's office here from 2013 to 2018. So for 5 years here.
And so New Orleans was there are places that are quietly high in murder, like St. Louis, maybe Baltimore. We're always talking about Chicago, you know, but there are places that are per capita higher than Chicago. I think St. Louis is, maybe Baltimore. I don't know. How's New Orleans, or how was it?
Yeah, so New Orleans has historically been one of the most violent cities. So we started the strategy in 2012. Our murder rate per capita every year from 2000 to 2011 was the highest of any city in the country every single year. We had 200 murders in 2011. After implementing the strategy, last year we had 119 murders. It's the lowest number of murders in 50 years, and we had the biggest reduction of any of the 20 most violent cities in their murder rate drop.
Well, I know this isn't possible, but we live in Los Angeles, in the city with the most traffic in the world. And considering I live in a nice neighborhood, I would swap those two stats just to commute a little faster. Again, I'm not in the inner city. Maybe this is something I should be just thinking and not saying. So you reduced it what percent?
Yeah, so we had 200 murders when we started. We had 119 last year. The murder rate drops actually bigger because New Orleans has grown a lot in that time, still recovering from Katrina. So it's been about a 50% reduction in the murder rate over that time.
And how did you achieve that?
Yeah, so some background on just murder in New Orleans. 90% of murder victims are African American. 90% are males. 90% are guns. 80% of the time, the victim knows the perpetrator. So these aren't random. And the biggest proportion is African American males aged 16 to 25. And so we designed our strategy of 30 initiatives spanning prevention, intervention, enforcement, and rehabilitation, specifically targeting that group of 16 to 25 year old African American males.
Yeah. So, you know, in this new world order where we're not allowed to talk about such things, it's like, if you'd like to reduce a problem, then you're going to have to figure out who's involved with that problem that you want to address. Right. If it happens to be black, then it happens to be black, but it also happens to be males. So, and it also happens to be males of a certain age, but you have to have that conversation in order to address, well, really any problem that you're trying to address. And it's true, you know, black people kill black people and white people kill white people. That's kind of how it works, but I think white people do it at a lower rate. And that's what we're talking about. So you find the group that is doing the most killing or is the most affected by this, and then you focus your attention on that group, which is which makes sense.
Yeah, we have limited resources, limited time, and so we need to focus on the group that can have the biggest impact. And so, we started with prevention. We started with intervention and enforcement because we literally had to stop the bleeding. But then we really moved to prevention because we recognized that, look, the only way you can have a long-term reduction is to focus on prevention. So that's your parenting, your education, recreation. And so half of our initiatives were really prevention.
And go ahead, Brian.
So you mentioned you had a 30 item action list of how to do the intervention, prevention. What were, two-part question, what were some of the more successful bullet points you guys installed, and what ended up being, let's say, outside the box or even controversial, or things that were a little unusual?
They steered away from the phrase bullet point. They would say highlighted.
But
I get it. Go ahead.
One of the big insights we had on the enforcement side was that New Orleans actually did have a gang problem. People didn't think we did because we don't have structured gangs like the Bloods and the Crips. What we do is we have these small groups, though, of 5 to 10 guys who would associate together and do criminal enterprise. And so we created a new gang unit specifically focused on them. It was multi-agency, so police, FBI, DEA, the U.S. Attorney. And we've really focused targeted enforcements on that group. We indicted 15 gangs and 140 individuals from there. But we also gave them a chance to change their life and get out of that lifestyle. We coordinated a network of service providers to say, and we went to them and said, look, we're going to crack down on you like no other. But if you want to change your lifestyle, we're going to give you everything you can need. If you need job training, mental health, substance abuse support, you know, come do that. And we had just as many people take us up on that, and they left the lifestyle to, you know, get regular jobs and be more productive. And so we saw a 50% reduction in gang violence very quickly from that.
Cool.
You know, it's you know, when you talk about this stuff, it all feels like it lands somewhere between no duh and no shit. Like, I don't get why these problems seem so unsolvable for big cities and modern eras. The information is there. The data is there. Maybe the political will isn't there. But yeah. Why is it this is all so solvable? And you're never going to get all of it. You're just going to reduce it. It's always going to exist. I mean, no one's going to live in a society without murder or homicides. But right. If you're going to live in a society with a very high rate of murder or homicides, then you don't want to live in that society. It's the same with drunk driving and, you know, fatalities per million miles traveled on the highways. It's going to exist. Let's see what we can do to shrink it down. And by the way, have you given this information to other cities as well?
Yeah, a lot of cities came to visit us to see how we were doing things. And so, we met with Memphis and Detroit and other random cities to kind of share what we were doing. It's not a secret sauce. It's simple, but it's not easy. Like, it takes a lot of willpower and a lot of effort and project management, but like the solutions, it's not like there's some magical solution that only we know about. It's just focusing on it and executing it well.
Well, and it seems like you found that perfect balance of carrot and stick, saying like, right. If you want to keep doing what you're doing, there's going to be consequences. And if you want a way out, we can help you with that too. It's your choice.
Definitely. Yeah. I think prevention is, also so important, because if you arrest these guys, more people are going to take their place. So the gold standard for prevention, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, they've identified 31 risk factors so the more of these risk factors a young person has, the more likely they are to be involved with violence. 10 of these risk factors are about parenting. So it's things like low parental involvement, low emotional attachment to parents, poor family functioning, poor monitoring and supervision of children, inconsistent discipline. That's just half of them. And so the way to sustainably reduce it over time is you need to reduce these risk factors in young people. And so they don't grow. You know, it's a lot harder to get them out of the lifestyle once they're in it.
Yeah. It's vexing to me that here we are all these years later, because I used to see this. Because, you know, I had a very unique perspective, because I hosted Loveline for 10 years and I just talked to screwed up teenagers for a decade. And so I started hearing about, now they weren't gangbangers per se, or it was a different form of banging they were involved with. But either way, every time I heard about all the ills that were coming from these young people, it was always the families were a mess. They were broken. They were fractured off. Dad wasn't around, blah, blah, blah. So I caught on early and often. It was about the family. It was about the dad not abandoning the family. There wasn't any racial component to it back then, because these were mostly just white kids who called in, and I would complain about how shitty their families were, and I want to know where their dad was. So it wasn't injected with everything. Everything is now race related, but this had nothing to do with that, because it was, you know, we were on K-Rock, and, you know, our average listener was 15-year-old chick from Orange County, California. So we didn't, you know, it wasn't a lot of inner city, urban-y, this or that. But it was still the same conclusions absent dads, broken families, kids going down this path that we wanted to avoid. And it's the same. It's the same remedy. It's the same. It's like. I always say diet and exercise, but diet and exercise, you don't give diet and exercise advice to a young black man or a young white man, but something different to an Asian man or a Hispanic man. It's just fucking diet and exercise. Right. I don't get why we're not more willing to speak about this as a society or why this is a fucking hate crime when you bring this shit up. But if you don't, then we're just going to have more folks that are super young and dead in the street. And it's a pretty solvable problem. Sean and his team made a drastic reduction in it by the way of a balance of being like proactive and community and carrot and stick, as Gina said, and showing a strong show of force and consequences. It's not one or the other. It's kind of a marriage of both. And speaking of marriage, just like the mom and the dad sort of at home, you know. Sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I will admit, of all the things we did, I think parenting and family is one of the hardest to impact. One is they're just harder. It's harder to reach parents. Like, people like doing programs with kids because we know where they are. They're in school. We can reach them easily. And we have all this data on how they're doing and which ones need the most help. Parents are harder to reach. A lot of the programs are in-home visit types. And then it's hard to convince them to take the help. Like, people don't want to admit that they're bad parents. And the ones who are willing to take the help are not necessarily the ones who need it the most. And so it is hard to do, but it's obviously extremely important. And so, I mean, you have to do it, but it is challenging.
Sean, can I give a plug for you or your foundation or your community, or if people want to learn more about it, can I send them a direction? Let's see. Oh, I have it here. Sorry. Where is there a website? Is there a place where people could get more information?
Yeah, so I left the mayor's office when the last mayor left office in 2018. So there's a new mayor that we were term limited, and so I would just look up they're carrying over a lot of the stuff. So I would just look up the New Orleans violence prevention, and there's tons of information. There's tons of stories all over the internet about the work we did.
Well, please go full Johnny Appleseed with your plan to
spread the message far and wide.
Thank you, Sean McCloskey. We appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right. So let's see. We'll do a spot. We'll do the news after the spot. Right, Max Apana? You know, Max, I know everyone zooms in, but I feel like the connection is I think people should just call in. Is it a better connection when you just call in? No? No, you don't know what I'm talking about? I feel like when I talk to someone on a cell phone, I got a much higher batting average than the Zoom in. I mean, you don't get the visual part.
Right.
But I don't know. The internet can be kind of dicey.
I like the audio better on Zoom, but if you prefer it, I mean, we can do calls. It's fine.
But don't you think Sean's was kind of dicey?
Sean was in a house with big ceilings.
Yeah, it was an echo.
I tried to get, I asked him to get in the smallest room he could possibly be in. Like, Brian and Gina are in nice, quiet rooms, but what we were hearing is a lot of airspace surrounding where he was.
But didn't you feel like his connection was a little...
His connection wasn't great. I agree.
Okay. Don't you feel like it's a better audio when you're over the phone?
It depends. I mean, there are certain guests where I think it really did help that you saw them as well.
Yeah. I'm just talking pure audio, though. I feel like pure audio, I got a better batting average on the phone.
Yeah, but we've had some pretty bad phone lines as well.
All right, thank you. Moving forward. Madison Reed. Thank you. It took a while. High ceilings, boss. All right. Working from home, staring at your coworkers, hair's turning gray, beard's turning gray. Thinking about getting a little coloring in? Well, you're not alone. Madison Reed Mister Gray Blending Natural Color for your hair and beard. And I've seen the before and after shots. They look spectacular. No shoe polish look here, my friends. And maybe just want a little more pepper and a little less salt. Madison Reed Mister makes it easy. Find your color match. Just go on the website and work it out. They have all sorts of selections on there. Quick, easy. Just apply the color gel to the dry hair, then the activator. Wait 10 minutes. Rinse, and there you go. Bob's your uncle. You look fantastic. Right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMister.com. And use code Adam for 10% off, plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the news with Bald and Gina right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gina, Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, speaking of all those crazy Trump tweets, President Donald Trump called wearing a mask patriotic in a tweet Monday. We have a picture. We posted a photo of himself wearing one, a basic precaution. Health experts, of course, have been urging Americans to take in the U.S. for a while now. Trump tweeted a black and white photo of him in a mask saying, "There is nobody more patriotic than me, your favorite president." So remember, he held a rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma last month where basically nobody was in a mask. But Trump says he's all for masks, even though he does not plan to issue a national mask mandate, according to Forbes. Trump seemed to, for a long time, want to avoid being seen publicly in a mask. He said, "I'm not going to give the press, you know, that kind of field day." But he is wearing one now. He wore it for the visit to the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. So maybe getting a few more people on board.
He should wear an Uncle Sam outfit. He should just switch.
Yes.
Just start right now.
Just dive in.
I don't think it would lose him a vote. I'm not sure if it would get him a vote. But if he just started dressing like Uncle Sam, he should just fucking dive in right now and do that. I would,
you know,
I would
what?
Like that. Yes.
I think you're right. And you know what? You could do a bundle. You could do the MAGA hat. And I can't believe they didn't think of this before. A face mask where it's Donald Trump's like mouth and nose. Have you seen those? You can do like smiles.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Hat mouth.
I want Rob Lowe, but yeah. Well, he could do Uncle Sam's beard, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right? He should do that. I'm just fixing to get on a plane and go to Texas. So I'm going to have my mask. How often are you supposed to cycle those masks? I got the disposable ones. Every time.
Do you have like the blue paper?
I got like
one?
The blue papery one. And it's been on my car seat since this thing started, I think.
Actually, that's okay, because if it's sitting outside, the sun probably helps if it's sitting on your car seat.
Yeah, well, it's going to, the greatest disinfectant, sunlight, is now hitting my mask. So I'm going to go test the mask out on a flight, too. And by the way, it's so weird. You know, I'm flying to Wisconsin. I got like a Snap-on tool thing to do over there. And then I'm going to Chicago. Then I'm going to Texas. We're going to do some live shows there. But, I got a first class ticket to Wisconsin. Well, it's to Chicago, and then you drive to Wisconsin on like United. And I said to Matt DeAndrea, who's going with me, I said, what's first class like these days? And what are we to do with first class? Like, what I used to be, they'd roll out a big cart with champagne and have an ice cream sundae, and, you know, first class
hot
was
meal.
First class. Yeah, now it's like, but I told you, everyone's looking for an excuse to cut back in the name of safety. So
right. He
was able to figure out whether they provide a snack, but it's unclear what that is. And then I'm like, drinks. Do they have drinks? It's a four-hour flight. It's first class. We're flying at night. He's like, they don't know. Like he literally called the airline and he said, "Do you have drinks in first class?" And they're like, "Yeah, we don't know." I thought, okay.
Depends.
Yeah. That's
quite an answer.
You're right. So either way, but I don't know. I feel like in first class we should have drinks, right? Or just, I don't know, how...
That's why you sit there.
That's why you sit there.
Eight people.
All right. Anyway.
So a little more Kanye news, and this is, like you said, somewhere between no shit and no duh. TMZ reports that Kanye West has turned on his family in the midst of what they're told is a bipolar episode. The gossip blog says West accused Kim Kardashian of trying to commit him to a mental hospital. In a series of tweets Monday, and I did try to get them, but I believe that they've been deleted. Kanye revealed his wife's plan to get him help just 24 hours after that bizarre, at times incoherent campaign rally in South Carolina. He said, quote, Kim was trying to fly to Wyoming with a doctor to lock me up like on the movie Get Out because I cried about saving my daughter's life yesterday. He then tweeted out a series of what he calls future fonts.
Saving your daughter's life when she falls out of a Zodiac boat into a raging river is one thing. Saving your daughter's life by not paying for an abortion, not quite the same thing that heroes are made of. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. Did that happen in Get Out? Did someone fly to Wisconsin to get someone?
No. He's just talking. I'm going to interpret for Kanye West, which is not something I make a habit of, but just being sort of locked in a society where people won't let you be yourself or, you know, you're sort of a hostage to another person's family.
Okay. I'm not a great parent, but even I wouldn't pontificate over the coin toss of aborting my kids. You know what I mean? Just because it's out there now.
That's between you and your wife.
It's on.
I don't think Kim was super happy about it.
It's on the internet now. You know what I mean? Yeah. At some point, however old your kid is now, they shall be able to understand that that was a decision that was being made. And
around.
Yeah, battered, just bandied about a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, look. And I fucking mean this. I've said, when people say to me, you know, key to a good marriage or a long marriage, and I say two TiVos and a lot of square footage, I fucking mean it. I there's no doubt. Kim and Kanye, I mean, the over-under on those two had to be 11 months. If they were living in 1,200 square feet worth of apartment in Van Nuys, one of them would be dead by now, right? At the other's hands. I mean, it's the fact that they live in these kind of estates. The fact that they live in, you know, there's 22,000 square feet of dwelling. You know, I mean, he wouldn't even, you know, when you're at home and you don't even know if your partner's at home or not, the rush for the divorce, it takes a little the pressure off the divorce, you know, the necessity.
Yeah, like I theorize, how often are they even under the same roof?
Well, if the roof covers 22,000 square feet of home, then who knows?
It doesn't matter.
How would you
I mean,
plus having multiple houses.
I have a biggish house, and you know, I'll come home and I'll be like in my office, and I'll be like, "Is Lynette and Sonny? Are they in the theater? Like watching? Like where are they?" Either way, when you hear them, and I have lived in probably 600 square foot in Hollywood with a girlfriend and a loft, not even a loft, a studio apartment. You know, everything is so annoying so quickly. Every time someone cooks something, you can smell it while you're laying on your futon. You know, everything is right in your grill. I think there are multiple residents mixed with tons of travel for work. Mixed with tons of square footage has kept these two lovebirds going as long as they have.
2.5 years. That's a little longer than that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can. I know that my parents would probably still be married today if they lived in Calabasas in one of the Kardashian houses. They wouldn't be happy, but they wouldn't have. When you're living in 900 square feet, you got to shit or get off the pot, especially when there's only one pot.
Yep.
So I don't know if you've seen or heard about this new drone, but researchers have developed a new coronavirus era drone that can disinfect an entire sports stadium within hours, according to Fox News. It's the Aeris Fog Company, and they said that the machine utilizes electrostatic technology to sanitize large areas by discharging cleaner through its nozzles, which attach to both ground surfaces and underneath seats and other surfaces like railings.
It's a crop duster.
Basically, yes. Yeah. It can spray up to 20 acres per hour. And they say the drone can be used indoors, outdoors, and can clean any area safely. And it will be disinfected 3 minutes after it's sprayed. The company recently tested the drone on Pittsburgh's Highmark Stadium and expects to have all the required certifications by fall.
So it has a hopper that has X amount of liquid juice. Material in it.
Yeah.
It's probably one of those four bladed ones.
Yes. With
the big, I imagine so.
It's got the big lifting capacity. And, you know, it's funny. I wasn't talking to you guys about it, but I was talking to Bjorn Lomborg about it, which is battery technology enables this stuff. I used to fly an electric model plane. I won't bore you with all the details, but 15, 20 years ago, the battery pack for that thing was a brick. I mean, it was a brick. It was.
Think about the VHS, the video recorders you have to carry around.
Right.
With a certain size for a tape, but a fucking huge battery.
The battery was essentially six or seven, maybe even eight C-cell batteries, daisy-chained and shrink-wrapped. So if you can picture the heft of eight C-cell batteries shrink-wrapped, that's what the battery is. Now, all the planes are electric. All the model planes are electric because they figured the batteries out. They're much smaller. When I first used electric tools, battery-operated power tools, all they had was a drill. They didn't have saws. They didn't have routers. They didn't have all the stuff you have now because they just didn't have the batteries for it. These drones are now all made possible because of this crazy battery technology, and we're getting it with cars as well. So it goes up, and it does that. And this is great until Al-Qaeda gets a hold of it and fills it with mustard gas, and we go full Black Sunday where they fucking fly it over. Oh, yeah.
Pittsburgh. wasn't that Pittsburgh?
It was a Coliseum, I think, on Black Sunday. Well, we'll look it up. They were playing the Steelers maybe in the Super Bowl.
Oh.
I think it was the Super Bowl. I think it may have been Dallas. And Gina's too young. She doesn't know the fuck we're talking about. But the Dallas Cowboys, I think they were using actual footage from the Dallas Cowboys playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, maybe in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But it was the L.A. Coliseum. And then some madman had like hijacked the Goodyear blimp. And they were going to attack the Coliseum with the blimp. I don't know. What do you got, Max Ben, on
that? The Miami Orange Bowl.
Oh, Miami Orange Bowl. Shit.
But it was Super Bowl X. It was Pittsburgh and, I believe, Dallas?
Yes. And what's the plot line? They had the Robert Shaw was in it. They got the Goodyear blimp. I'm just telling you, everybody, all this technology, it's awesome, but it's really like... It's like a handgun. It's like in the hands of a gangbanger, bad times. In the hands of a good cop, good times. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I thought you were done. You paused. Go ahead.
I'll keep going. This with a hopper full of disinfectant, good. Hopper
Great.
Full of sarin gas, taking out the whole fucking stadium. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm looking at the poster for Black Sunday, what I assume is the original poster. It's the Goodyear blimp knocking over a huge bank of lights in the Orange Bowl. The tagline says Black Sunday. Tagline, it could be tomorrow. That only applies if it's Saturday.
That's true. That's true.
There's only one day a week that works.
Also,
tomorrow cannot be Black Sunday.
It's also one of those fucking things they used to do in 70s movie posters all the time, which I believe should be illegal, which is put on the poster shit that never happens in the movie. Like they commandeered the Goodyear blimp and they flew it into the stadium and they're like, oh, but they never knocked over the lighting or anything. They're just all right. Anyway,
the people in the crowd seem very calm for the Goodyear blimp being on top of them.
They don't see it yet.
Yeah, they're watching the play on the field. Anyway, this is going to turn into Black Sunday. Go ahead.
Perfect.
Yep.
So with football season just around the corner at this point, the NFL and Players Union have agreed on a daily COVID-19 testing protocol so that training camps can begin. In a league-wide memo obtained by CNN, the NFL outlines the screening and testing guidelines now in place. Coronavirus testing will begin at the start of training camps and last for 2 weeks. Results from those weeks will dictate if they're going to switch it to every other day, which I think they would rather do, but the players want it every day. Also,
Wait a minute. I think I got a new rich man, poor man, tested repeatedly for coronavirus. You either work at a slaughterhouse for Hormel and like Arleta, where they've had a big breakout, or you're a baller in the NBA or the NFL, right?
That's right.
The regular, the middle class guy gets tested once or twice, but it's not like not like when you're working at the meat packing place and they've fucking been decimated by it, right?
That's right.
Rich man, poor man.
They also offered the players' union the opportunity to skip all preseason games, according to a source familiar with negotiations. So, you know, everything looking a little different, but we'll see. The players are like, you know, my wife is pregnant, or you know, it's not just them. There's really throwing the old wife excuse around. I think a lot of these guys.
I think some of these guys are really piling on. They're like, my wife, and then three bitches I'm banging. They're all pregnant.
That's right.
Okay.
How am I supposed to keep them safe?
That's right. Sorry.
So Gavin Newsom, the governor here in California, said Monday that hair salons and barbershops could offer services outside now. The announcement provides relief to these salons that closed in March under the stay-at-home orders. They were allowed to reopen for the hottest of hot seconds and then closed again during the new shutdown orders. The new guidance says outdoor services are permitted if patrons and stylists wear masks, meet other safety requirements. The allowed outdoor services include skincare, cosmetology, nails, massage, outdoor massage. Electrology, tattooing, and piercing are not allowed.
This
indoors,
by the way,
outdoors.
This could have saved Bob Kraft a lot of trouble. If he'd just moved that shit outside, we wouldn't even be talking about him right now. You know what I mean?
Bob who?
That's right.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Yeah. You know, the barber, I've been into a couple of these places. They have the chairs, they're 6 feet apart. Everyone's wearing a mask. They kind of, everyone is spread out. I don't know. I get the indoor crowds, the bars, the honky tonks or something, but the way they did when I went to Super Cuts or Fantastic Cuts or Sports Clip Cuts or whatever the hell I did, it was like everything was spread out. It didn't seem like the indoor and the outdoor would have been that impactful. Yes, Brian.
I don't purport to know the science, but you know the word is that indoors is more dangerous than outdoors. Fine, we can agree on that. Also, aerosolizing is a big thing now. Like if you're using the hairdryer or the whatever, getting it into the air is apparently a big thing. That's why I go to physical therapy twice a week. I'm doing exercises and stuff. I'm wearing a mask as required by the clinic. The physician is wearing a mask. Like everyone has to wear a mask. Because you're exhaling, you're breathing.
Are you indoor? Are they doing it indoors?
Yep. Yeah, it's a medical facility, so they take your temperature when you come in and they disinfect everything.
I think they could do that with the hair and the whatever. But look, somebody.
Not on a breezy day.
But here's
the fucked up cut.
Also, again, nothing's free. So there's going to be a weird story years from now where it's like, well, what happened to your mom? Killed by a drunk driver. Oh, really? Where was she? She was getting her hair cut. But
wait, what?
What? Well, she was getting killed by a drunk driver. Guy was a.
Did the driver drive inside of an establishment?
No. He was in the parking lot of a Gelson's. They have a couple. There's a real estate place there too.
I promise, I'm trying to follow you.
Yeah. Oh no, she was getting a bob. Or maybe she's getting her roots dyed. Anyway, I shouldn't even say dyed. It brings up too many bad memories. But I think the Korean nail lady may have been in a coma as well. She didn't escape unharmed.
Did the driver drive through a mall?
Hard to talk about. No, I know. You're thinking Blues Brothers. No, this guy just had one too many after work. He was a union drywaller. And so mom died. She's getting her hair cut.
Sorry for your loss.
So, you know. I'm just saying, if you got kids out there, before they get their hair cut, hug them. You give them a hug.
Check their underwear.
You hug them. That's right. Sorry.
So here's a different take on the wear a mask or get out of our establishment. A restaurant in Northern California says they won't serve any customers who are wearing a mask. This is according to multiple posts and reviews on Yelp and social media. Social media users posted photos of a sign currently posted outside the Apple Bistro that said no social conditioning, no oxygen deprivation mask, no latex dirty germ spreader. Not required here. This may not be for you.
I'm sure Applebee's is over the moon that the place called Apple Bistro has gone full fucking commando with this shit.
Yeah, they're in El Dorado County.
They're in Placerville. And apologies to our Placerville listeners, although we don't have any because people in Placerville can't figure out how to work an iPhone.
Oh, wow.
How dare you, Brian? I shall inform you that the Ringwald family hails from Placerville, California.
Really?
And I do believe had at least relocated back to Placerville at some point in their career.
I'm actually completely joking. Placerville is a lovely town. I know because my grandparents lived in Lake Tahoe. They retired there my entire youth, and I would make many trips by car back and forth from the Bay Area to Lake Tahoe. And Placerville was our stop because one of the things that made me a fat kid, there was a place. Oh, what was it called? Doesn't matter. They had the best cinnamon rolls. I was a little kid. I would down one the size of my head. They were amazing.
Is this kind of a Springfield versus Sweetie pies.
Are they still around?
Sweetie Pie's
still around, and did the Ringwalds hail from Placerville? I'm almost positive they came from Placerville out to North Hollywood. Certainly.
Wow.
Yeah, up the street. Sorry. And are they back? Is Bob back in Placerville? I think he may be.
You might be thinking of Roseville.
No.
That's near there.
Oh, they were from Placerville. She
was born in Roseville. Molly, at least, was.
Oh, maybe the hospital in Roseville or something. If you lived in Placerville, would that work that way?
Sweetie Pies is open. People of Placerville, you obviously know, but in the surrounding areas, get yourself a cinnamon roll. Those are delightful. Oh, Fat Brian wants them.
Oh,
look at that.
Oh man, pecans. Pecans.
And imagine
come on.
How big that is.
Oh, so good.
I mean, Bob has been known to play the Placerville Festival, the Ragtime Festival.
There's
a connection there.
I'm gonna say, yeah. Well, I don't know. They always said they're from Placerville, but I guess that's where.
Yeah, Bob lives in Placerville now. So
It's my story.
That's a strong case.
I'm holding
this
together.
Article says Bob is blind and now lives in Placerville near Roseville, where he and his wife Adele raised Molly and her two siblings.
Oh, well, maybe they said Placerville like you'd pick the bigger town that someone from North Hollywood may have heard of.
Sure,
like people would, yeah.
I guess so, I didn't know where either one was, and I called it Plasterville, but that's me.
they're both a builder through and through. Though.
Listen, when you move to North Hollywood trying to start a new life, you come from a shithole, believe you me.
Yes, yes, the math checks out.
I'll tell you, man, Adele Ringwald, the mom, speaking of sticky buns, that chick baked her ass off, man. She was a big-time baker. And I loved going over to their house because she loved it. You know, the people that bake, the people they live with most of the time don't appreciate what they do. But the outsiders, like when I 15 and I showed up at that house and she pulled a big strudel out of the oven, I was like, oh, this is good. And she was like, she loved it. She loved to watch me enjoy the shit out of her baking. Yeah, Adele. Good old Adele.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's Molly and Beth's mom.
Well, authorities have taken a Michigan woman into custody after she allegedly made a scene inside of a pizza place. So according to the reports, after being asked to wear a mask, the suspect flipped off the employees and then attempted to leave. At that point, she reportedly ran over a police officer's foot with her pickup truck. The suspect allegedly became upset after one of the restaurant workers asked her to put on the mask, and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer issued a mandate on July 10th that requires residents to wear a mask in these indoor places. Allegedly responded to the face mask request by sticking her hands underneath the plexiglass barrier, flipping off the employees, and she also kicked another customer that attempted to intervene. So ladies are
shit-kicking
themselves.
Yeah, she looks. She looks it. I got to tell you, the look that a lot of women are adopting with the little stud that's kind of above the lip on one side, making their face a little asymmetrical. The little stud in the nose. I don't get it. I look at that, and it looks like a piece of broccoli on your front tooth when we're eating dinner. Like it I want to flip
it off.
Yeah,
it's like a derma piercing. Where Cindy Crawford's mole would be.
Yeah, I was going to say, and Cindy Crawford looks great. On Chrissy Teigen look great. Other people?
Well, the whole thing, if a seagull shit on Cindy Crawford's forehead, you'd go, yeah, it works for her. It looks good on Cindy.
I don't recommend
the seagull shit for others, but for Cindy, it works. All right, let me hit Tommy John's. Summer is in full swing. Tommy John's proud to announce their new essentials. Guaranteed to redefine comfort no matter how hot it is out there. New hammock pouch, max support for your manhood. Everything is amazing. They have number one customer favorite Second Skin Plus products in the hammock-shaped pouch down there for the boys. Made from ultra-light, breathable, anti-odor, air mesh fabric. This stuff's the best. I wear it every single day. I think I was wearing the t-shirt or the undershirt on Tucker yesterday. Ladies, they got the brand new comfort smoothing fabric and bralettes and underwear as well. Breathable, lightweight, accentuates what you love and smooths over what you don't. Thank goodness. It's Tommy John. It's the best. Right, Dawson?
Go to TommyJohn.com. For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
All right, let's do one more, Gina Grad.
All right, well, you're going to have to say goodbye to some of your favorite things over at Trader Joe's, or at least the name of some of your favorite things at Trader Joe's.
Oh, yeah.
They're getting rid of product names like Trader Jose's, Arabian Joe's, Trader Giotto's,
Trader Ming's.
Yep.
Thick that I was staring at that taco box for 20 minutes going, what's wrong with the thing? It says, I was just reading it as Trader Joe's tacos. I had to look at it and go, oh, Trader Jose's tacos?
Jose.
Yeah.
And the Trader Giotto's pizza.
But in
their defense, which is a pretty flimsy defense, they do it across many product lines. Like Gina was saying, like Trader Giotto's for like their olive oil or stuff. Like they do it for all ethnic foods. It was probably a cute little gimmick at the time, but you can't do that now.
They even have Joe-san for some of their Japanese stuff.
For the Jewish, for the bagels, it's Trader Josef.
It is.
Why do we have to sterilize society to the point where it's kind of not interesting anymore? Like, can't we let companies kind of, I don't know, wink and nod and have some fun? I agree. If it's across the board, if it's just for Italian and Jewish and Hispanic, what is that?
The company said, you know, it was just a light, you know, kind of fun thing we were doing. But guess the age. And if you want location for bonus points of the person who is spearheading this campaign, as because this is exoticizing other cultures.
I'm going with yourself. All right. Well, then I'm going with Adele Ringwald, Placerville, California, age 79.
Couldn't be farther.
What?
A 17-year-old from the Bay Area who's been declared as a rising high school senior and human rights activist. The petition says the Trader Joe's branding is racist because it exoticizes other cultures. It presents Joe as the default normal and the other characters falling outside of it. They are Arabian Joe, Trader Jose, and Trader Joe-san. So they're in the process of rebranding.
I pray this isn't a dude. Is this young person a dude?
Briones Bedell.
Briones.
Anybody's Bedell. Guess. Hold on.
Briones Bedell. Ugh. Bay
That's
Area
a UFC
7th.
Fighter.
I know.
I love that guy. Or guy kicks ass.
Weak side tackle on the Ravens. No one's got the blind side like Briones.
Jesus. I wanted to confirm the age, so I looked at a couple different articles, and I'm looking right now, but there's no picture of this.
Probably he's a minor. He's
17. Yeah.
I hope it's a boy, and I hope it's a boy so that we can force him to mate with Greta Thunberg to have the most obnoxious human being on the planet. We'll have they'll give birth to the most obnoxious 5-year-old that was ever fucking born.
Precocious.
Oh, God damn. It's just fucking Trader Joe's. You know, they wear like Hawaiian shirts. They're kind of fun. Oh, it's a chick. It's a fucking.
There you go.
It's
She looks like a Kristen Bell type.
Yeah.
You know, she looks just like very perky, blonde, you know, almost that Tracy Flick in Election quality.
Yeah. And I'll tell you the problem. The problem is everyone is listening to young people, which I told people to stop doing a long time ago, but they wouldn't fucking, they thought they were the future and whatever. Like if Briones Bedell says, hey, you know what? I find Trader Joe's, some of the product names to be problematic. The answer shouldn't be, let me get my steno pad. Tell me all about it. The answer should be, go back to worrying about the prom, bitch. That should be the answer. Let the adults handle the fucking naming of products at their own stores. Jesus goddamn Christ. All right. It's all your fault for listening to young people and deciding they are the future. They don't know shit. And by the way, when I was 17, nobody should ever listen to me about anything. I didn't know shit either. I wasn't all fucking full of myself like everyone is now. All right. Let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina, Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, there's Geico. You want to save an extra 15%? How about you do it on your car insurance, your motorcycle insurance, RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money you could already be saving if you switch over to Geico. So what are you waiting for, man? Never been a better time to switch on over to Geico and save a bunch of do-re-mi. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Just visit geico.com to learn more at geico.com. All right. Stephen Dubner and Angela Duckworth are waiting for us. We will bid adieu to Brian and Gina and say hi to Stephen and Angela right after this.